From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Texas has a history of voter suppression, but to O'Rourke explains that it's still a problem today.
What is happening in this pandemic and at this moment is just compounding the voter registration challenges put in place in Texas, really going back to the end of Reconstruction.
And the Texas House Committee on Elections is watching how voting is happening in the pandemic, and they're looking for fixes. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Beto O'Rourke came within 2 percentage points of winning his race for U.S. Senate in 2018 against Republican Ted Cruz. The results of that race have been seen as proof that Texas is a swing state, and there is a demographic trend that is shifting the state into a shade of blue. The results of November 3rd will be watched by the nation to see if that, in fact, is how the cow eats the cabbage. O'Rourke, a former congressman from El Paso, ran for the Democratic nomination for president but failed to find his breakout moment, and has been working since to flip the Texas House for the Democrats, and he's been working on registering voters. But getting eligible people to deal with the voter registration laws in Texas has been more difficult than many have anticipated, especially since the arrival of COVID-19.
What is happening in this pandemic and at this moment is just compounding the voter registration challenges put in place in Texas, really going back to the end of Reconstruction. The most recent iterations of these obstacles include the most onerous voter ID laws in the country, 750 polling place closures just since 2012 in Texas, which is more than any other state by a wide margin. And Dave, the majority of those 750 polling place closures have occurred in communities with the fastest growing Black and Latino populations. You have racial gerrymandering, where the Republican-controlled legislature has redrawn congressional and state house districts based on race, so trying to diminish the impact and power and likelihood that Black voters and Latino voters will actually cast a ballot. And that's not me saying that. That's a group of federal judges in 2017 describing this as a racial gerrymander. And then all of that is happening at the same time that you have the deadliest pandemic occurring in Texas since 1918 that has killed nearly 15,000 of our fellow Texans, but has not taken lives equally across the state. It's really decimating communities of color, the very same communities that have been so intentionally excluded from the franchise. And so you probably saw this picture, and maybe even reported on this, of the lines at Texas Southern University in Houston during the March Democratic primary. So this is well into the pandemic, where we knew that this was deadly and was spreading very quickly. People were waiting 6 and 7 hours in line to cast a ballot, and that is directly connected to the voter suppressive tactic of closing down polling places so you have fewer places at which you can vote. So it is a challenge to vote in Texas, but I'll tell you, we've seen extraordinary turnout despite that in both the primary and the runoff to the primary. So I actually feel that, you know, pretty good about our chances of seeing continued high turnout going into November. And if that happens, you then maybe have a change of control in the state legislature, and many of these voter suppressive laws that I described can be overturned.
There's some debate, you know, if you go to a broad spectrum of people from the political views, and the people who are conservative say there is no voter suppression. This is voter security. We need to have all of these difficulties put in place to make sure people really want to vote, and also make sure they really aren't trying to scam the election process and do something illegal. I mean, so how do you respond to people who say there is no voter suppression?
You have to respond by starting with the facts. And I'll quote some to you that I actually got from the Heritage Foundation, which, as you know, is one of the most conservative think tanks in the country. So they looked at mail ballot fraud in Texas from 2015 to 2020. they were able to find seven instances, a single digit, in Texas in that time, in that 5 year period. They looked at nine counties where 200,000 mail-in ballots took place, and they found that was about 6% of the total votes, those mail-in ballots in 2018. So mail-in balloting, a pretty small percentage of total votes cast, and then of fraudulent votes in mail-in balloting, the national statistic is 0.0025%. Of people fraudulently voting. And then there's another related issue that you'll hear about from Texas Republicans, and that's the concern that non-citizens are voting. And if you go to the Brennan Center, you find that the instances of verified non-citizen voting in America are 0.0001%. So these tactics of voter ID, for example, are solutions in search of a problem. There really is no problem with voter fraud in Texas or in the country, but it is a convenient excuse to seek to limit the franchise. And Dave, I've got to tell you, it has been devastatingly effective, this tactic. On the eve of the 2018 midterm election, Texas ranked 50th, dead last in the country, in voter turnout. And that is not for lack of love of democracy. It is because of the racial gerrymandering, the voter ID, the polling place closures, and the history of suppression and voter intimidation that has taken place in Texas.
But there are conservatives who say and can point to their own statistics that show that there has been an increase in the participation in the vote with people of color in Texas. And they say, this is proof. They point to this saying, see, there is no voter suppression because we see people voting.
Those people are voting despite the obstacles put in their place. And, you know, I think it's really important that we understand that this is not something new. And by the way, not historically speaking, restricted to one party. What it really is an example of the way that white people in Texas have tried to restrict the franchise and keep non-white people in Texas from being able to vote. Democrats did this through much of the 20th century. In fact, from 1924 to 1944 in the state of Texas, by force of law, you had the all-white Democratic primary. If you were black, if you were Mexican-American, if you were from a community of color, you literally, by law, this wasn't how many beans are in the jar, this isn't recite the Constitution, This isn't some trick used to keep you out. This is literally the force of law that kept people of color from voting in Texas. And it was only ended by order of the Supreme Court, thanks to actually in El Paso and Dr. Lawrence Nixon, who took the case to the Supreme Court twice. You have a history of the poll tax. You have forced annual re-registrations. You had a tangle with the Department of Justice after the Voting Rights was passed in 1965, and then you have the voting rights neutered in 2013 by the Supreme Court with the Shelby decision, and literally within minutes, Texas imposes the most onerous, restrictive voter ID laws. And I need to make an important point. Many of us would agree that presenting some form of ID when you vote is important. I don't disagree with that. But when Democrats said, allow young people to present a student ID, that was struck down by Republican leadership. When they asked that veterans be allowed to submit a VA card from the VA, that was struck down. When they asked that older Americans who no longer are driving be able to show an expired driver's license that has their photo, has all their information on that, that was struck down. And what this does is it keeps people of color, keeps older people, keeps poor people, keeps young people, and even keeps some veterans from otherwise being able to vote. It makes it hard on them. And then there's this, beyond the people who are actively kept from voting, it also impacts others who witness that and say, you know what, do I want to put up with the hassle of voting in a state where they clearly do not want me to vote? I'm just going to pass this one up. That's how we got to 50th. And my hat's off to everyone, especially from communities of color in 2018, who said, to hell with this, I'm going to try to vote anyhow, no matter how hard they try to make it for me. And there are so many great examples of that across Texas. And I hope that trend continues into 2020.
you bring up the fact that there are psychological reasons why some people decide they don't want to vote. You know, there's a lot to deal with to go vote these days, particularly in the pandemic, and they may decide it's not worth it, particularly if I'm a Democrat and you vote in Texas and it doesn't matter, the Republicans always win. And say, so why should I go through all this trouble to go vote if, you know, it's just sort of a symbolic sort of gesture. But as Texas moves closer and closer, more neck and neck, sort of a toss-up state, and we've seen that with 538 and other pollsters, analysts looking at the way Texas is going, that's no longer the case. It's a jump ball. And so do you think that's going to motivate more people to go vote?
I do. And I also think that we have the example of 2018. I mentioned that on the eve of the 2018 election, we ranked 50th in the country. But after the 2018 election, that was no longer the case, in large part because, as you alluded to, those who had been intentionally marginalized or excluded or suppressed or intimidated in the past were, thanks to their courage, able to transcend those obstacles and cast their ballots. And we had the greatest voter turnout in a midterm in Texas since 1970, 2 years before I was even born. In 2018, you had a surge in young voter participation. Just in early voting, their rate of participation was up 500%. And though we didn't win at the top of the ticket, I didn't defeat Ted Cruz. I did win more votes than any Democrat has ever won in Texas. And importantly, we picked up 2 new seats in Congress. We picked up 12 new seats in the state house. Harris County, home to the most diverse city in the country, Houston, Texas, picked up 17 new African-American women in judicial positions, literally changing the face of criminal justice in that community. So I think we all witnessed what was possible in 2018, and I think it has people very excited about 2020, and it's revealed this truth, which is for decades, Texas really hasn't been a red state. It's been a non-voting state. And when we vote, and when we vote in the kind of numbers we saw in 2018, We suddenly, as you just put it, we become a state where the presidential election is finally in contention for the first time in 44 years. 1976 was the last time that our state awarded its Electoral College votes to the Democratic nominee. And Joe Biden is within the margin of error in every major poll I've seen for many weeks straight now. And that's really exciting. So this will come down to how much the electorate has grown since 2016. And as of July, 2.1 million additional Texans had registered to vote since 2016. And then how much of that electorate actually turns out to vote when voting begins in 27 days on the 13th of October, first day of early voting, through November 3rd, Election Day. I really think Texas is going to decide the future, not just of Texas, but of the country. And it will do so with this expanded electorate that is turning out in numbers greater than we've seen for most of us in our lifetimes.
When we talk about voter suppression, many people have this idea of Knight Riders and hoods coming around and burning down churches and doing all these horrible things. And that did happen in history. But voter suppression now is much more subtle because it's a lot of little things helping people make a decision not to go vote. One of them is that's been introduced and has been called a voter suppression tactic. I'm not sure if it is, but you can tell me what you think. They say that the elimination of the straight ticket voting in Texas, this is the first presidential election, we were not going to have that, and that not having it will slow down voting and will make voting lines longer. And also there's the hope that some people will not vote the entire ticket. And there's kind of a struggle over who's going to be able to communicate better to their get out the vote rank and file to make sure you vote the entire ticket. So what is your take on something like straight ticket voting, the elimination of?
You know, I think that the intent was a cynical one, which was to depress Democratic voter turnout by eliminating the straight ticket ballot. But I think it's going to be unsuccessful in large part because of how excited people are about the candidates who are running down ballot. I mean, we've always heard about the coattail effect. You know, you have a, you know, popular top of the ticket candidate, you know, running for president or U.S. Senator or governor, and they send voters down ballot to the state house and county commissioner races. And really, you're seeing so many extraordinary candidates running down ballot. And I think they are going to be the ones responsible for expanding the electorate, electrifying those voters, and sending them up ballot to MJ Hagar for Senate and to Joe Biden for president. So, you know, whether it's Selena Montoya in the San Antonio area or Natalie Hurtado in the Houston area, Alisa Simmons in North Texas, these are all women who are running for state house who are engaging an electorate that was really never reached out to. So I do think this is a cynical attempt to depress turnout and participation. I don't think it's going to work. And really, it's because of the amazing candidates, so many of them women, women of color, and Black women specifically, who are running in this election year. So I think we are more than a match for this effort.
If Joe Biden is elected president on November 3rd or the days after, as more votes, mail-in votes come in, he looks around for people to staff his cabinet. Would you be open to HUD secretary, transportation secretary, something along those lines?
No, I mean, it's not something I've thought of, not something I've been offered, and I don't know that it's anything that I would want to pursue. I've got to tell you, I was in Congress for 6 years, traveling back and forth to El Paso, Texas every week. I was racing across the state of Texas, all 254 counties through 2017, 2018. I spent a year of my life campaigning for the nomination for president in 2019. I'm finally home in El Paso, and I love it. And this is the most time I've had a chance to spend with my wife, Amy, and our three kids. And I love it. And I love volunteering with our group, Powered by People, for all these great state house candidates. So I love being in Texas. I want to be in Texas. I love being at home here in El Paso. And I love supporting great candidates who are getting after it and running these important races. So if there's a way that I can keep doing this, I will continue to do this. But I am going to do everything I can to help Joe Biden become the next president. And then I'll do everything I can to help him and also hold him accountable for the very ambitious agenda over which he needs to preside if this country is going to meet the threats and challenges and also make the most of the opportunities that are before us.
Beto O'Rourke is a former congressman from El Paso. He was a candidate for the Democratic nomination for president. Voting laws are first introduced in the Texas House Elections Committee, and since Republicans hold the majority of the seats in the House, they hold the majority of the seats on that committee. So it's been tough, if not impossible, for Democrats to pass bills that they say would make registering to vote and voting easier in Texas. Representative Philip Cortez, a San Antonio Democrat, is the vice chair of the House Committee on Elections.
Given everything that's going on right now with COVID-19, the number one concern that we have at the Elections Committee at the state level is what can we be doing to institute policies or procedures that will allow for a greater number of people to participate in the election process. We do not want people to feel that they are at risk, or that they're in any way going to be exposed to COVID-19 by exercising their civic duty of voting. And as you know, a lot of our most consistent voters are also our senior citizen population, which is 65 and older, which can be more vulnerable to the COVID-19 virus in terms of its impact on them, on their health. And so it's important that we get the message out and we try to determine what have other states done to institute some best practices to protect the voters and also protect the election workers? And what can we be doing to educate residents that are eligible to vote in the upcoming election, to educate them, to let them know that we are taking every precaution possible and that they will be safe when they go and exercise their civic duty? And so the goal at the state level is to increase turnout and to downplay any concerns that they might have by going out of their home and going and casting a vote.
Currently, we're having a conflict between some county election clerks, like in Bexar County, Harris County. They want to send out mass mail-in ballot forms to qualified voters in their area. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has gone to court in order to stop that. The court so far have gone along with Ken Paxton. They point to the law. They say there's nothing in the law that gives an election administrator the authority to take that kind of action. You, as the vice chair of the Texas House Elections Committee, y'all write the laws in this regard. So do y'all look at what's happening today and say, well, we need to fix that?
Absolutely. If this is, if there is one thing that COVID has shown us and has been teaching us, is that we need to have a new outlook and a new approach as to how we're conducting not only elections, but other state businesses and agencies that that are utilized on a daily basis by our residents. This is a wake-up call to the state that just because we've always done it that way doesn't mean it's the best way moving forward, especially with this pandemic in place. And so there are changes that can be made at the state level. We are currently not in our legislative session right now to make those changes, but we will be here in the next 3 months, beginning in January. And so during that time, we will be taking up a lot of these issues and a lot of these concerns being brought forth by the counties who administer the elections at the local level. And we're going to look at all of their concerns, and we're going to determine what we're going to do to change things with the perspective of COVID-19 being in our communities. We have never dealt with anything like this in modern time, and so this is the first time that we can actually apply some of these lessons that we're learning from COVID-19 and you know, the transmission of COVID-19 and what we can be doing differently to limit that transmission and ultimately eliminate it from our community. And so, yes, a lot of the responsibility and authority falls to the state on that, and we will absolutely be taking up different policies and initiatives, hopefully brought forward by our county elections administrators as to how we conduct elections, starting with the November election coming up and moving forward after that. I'm going to assume that COVID-19 will be in our community for an extended time. Well, obviously, we're hoping and we're praying that it won't be, and we'll be able to get it under control and maybe one day eliminate it. But we're assuming it will still be here, even if there is a vaccine in place. We still have to continue to look at what we can be doing differently to limit transmission of COVID-19 in our community for some time to come in the future.
And there could be other disasters. We don't know what they are, but we know they've got a lot of hurricanes in the Gulf.
I assure you, this on New Year's Eve of December 31st of 2019, nobody could have predicted that 2020 was going to turn out the way it has in terms of a global deadly pandemic. And so anything can happen. And so we need to start looking at our procedures from that perspective as to what can we be doing to ensure safety is in place and protocols are in place to protect every single person, whether they're a worker or whether they're an actual voter that participate in the election process.
Now, we are in a small window right now where the Texas public can communicate to the Texas House Elections Committee with submissions of how they think the election system is dealing with the pandemic and other disasters. You're asking for feedback from the public. However, the deadline for this is Friday, September 18th. That's now. But what are you asking people to tell you?
Well, number one, any of the agencies that we have oversight within our committee's jurisdiction, we want some input on what we can be doing to make some changes as to the policies or state laws potentially that guide and put the processes in place for these different agencies, specifically all the county elections offices. They are relying on state law to guide them through this, and it's also prohibiting them from instituting maybe some of their ideas for the public to ensure that they have access and that they feel safe when they go and vote.
Currently, you are the vice chair of the Texas House Elections Committee. We don't know what the legislature will look like in January with the new session. You have an election to get through, and there's some speculation that the House of Texas House could become Democrat majority. That would change how the House Elections Committee is made up. The Democrats would now have majority seats. During the last legislative session, we saw many votes on the election bills go straight down party lines. And also bills that many Democrats have been calling for reforms, for voter registration, voter access, being able to have online voter registration, constantly being stonewalled because they lacked a majority to do that in this key committee, elections committee. So if, and this is hypothetical, if you come back to the legislature in the next session, if you're now no longer vice chair, maybe you'll be chair of the House Elections Committee. How different would that be than what it was in the last legislative session?
If the voters of my district are willing to give me another 2 years to serve them and at the Capitol, and if the Democrats do end up taking the 9 seats that necessary to flip the House of Representatives to a Democratic body, a lot of these issues that were not passed will be taken up again, and hopefully we will be able to convince some of our colleagues from the other side of the aisle to also go along with them based on the new normal that we're in right now with COVID-19. COVID-19 is not a partisan virus. This COVID-19 impacts every Texan, and so it's not discriminating against one party or another. And so what I'm trying to say is that it impacts everybody, including the constituents and our Republican colleagues districts. And so I'm hoping with that perspective that they will agree that we need to do things differently and we need to change up some of our current laws in place. One that you did mention was the online voter registration, which I think is very important. My colleague, Representative Celia Israel, who's also on the committee with us, has been trying to get that passed now for a couple of sessions. And that is, once again, trying to increase accessibility to elections and increase voter turnout by having online voter registration. And so that's just one example of a bill that will definitely be taken back up and hopefully it will have a different outcome. But at the same time, we're hoping it won't just be down party lines. I mean, we want to work closely with our Republican colleagues to try to pass election laws that benefit all constituents of ours, not just blue or red. We want to benefit all Texans. And so by no means, if I have the privilege of serving as chairman of the committee, would I in any way just, you know, eliminate my Republican colleagues' input? I want their input. I want to work closely with them. I want them to know that that this is not just going to be a straight partisan type of committee. We will take up the best laws or potential laws that are impact the most amount of Texans in a positive way. And their input will be just as welcome and valued as my Democratic colleagues. And so, but there are some bills, yes, that did fail down party line, and those would be taken up again for reconsideration with the COVID outlook and the COVID perspective applied to it this time.
Representative Philip Cortez, a San Antonio Democrat, is the vice chair of the House Committee on Elections. I did make multiple requests for an interview with the chair of the committee, Republican Representative Stephanie Click, and I got no response. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past episodes of Texas Matters, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.